Though this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Yud Zayin of the Book of Yechezkel, 17th chapter of the Book of Yechezkel, a shorter chapter than the day before is, but one that is in some ways more complicated because it too enters into a metaphor, but not a metaphor that is as clear as the one before, and we see that right at the beginning, because Pasuk Aleph is Vayidvar Hashem Elai Le'emor, but Pasuk Bet is Ben Adam Chud Chida Uvishol Mashal Al Beit Yisrael. So Chud Chida, the JPS English has propound a riddle, but that points out that Achida and Mashal are very similar to each other. They're metaphors or are ways of expressing something in metaphoric terms, except that Achida is Achidah is not obvious to everybody, and we're going to see that later in the Perek. They're going to turn to Yechezkel and they're going to say, what are you talking about? So we'll go through the metaphor. We have the Mefarshim on our side to help us explain it, but they were not so clear about that. So here's the mashal. So he says, Pasuk Gimel, V'amarta kol amar Hashem Elokim ha-nesher ha-gadol gindol ha-knafayim erech ha-iver maleh ha-notza ha-shelo ha-rikma ba'el ha-lebanon v'ikach ha-tzameret ha-ares. So the literal translation is, you say to them, the great eagle or griffin vulture, which has broad wings and long erech ha-iver is long, so the JPS has pinions, which would mean its grabbing abilities are very long. Malaya notsa shelo rikma, has full plumage and brilliant colors. So the JPS points out this is just an eagle because a vulture, even though it's often called a nesher, it usually has a bald head and dark feathers. And here we're talking about it's colorful and bright, and it comes to the Lebanon. The Lebanon is a famous forest. So the JPS has the Lebanon range, but the Radak points out that Eretz Yisrael is also called Livanon because we have the Beit HaMikdash, and that's sort of part of what's going on here. Vayikach et tzameret ha'ares, and takes the, grabbed off the crown of a cedar tree, meaning it's a very top, very high tree, and a very powerful tree, and he, this Nesher, comes along and grabs the top of it. So this is taken to be, by the Mefarshim, as an image of a Nebuchadnezzar coming to Har Tzion, which where the kings were, and plucking off the top of the king, meaning putting to exile Yechaniah or Yehoyah, and putting Tzidkiyahu into place as the replacement king. Eight Rosh Yon Katav Vayvil Eretz Kenan. He takes the, when he cuts off the heads of its, or the heads of its growths, that would mean like the nobility that he brings to. So Eretz Kenan here, you might think means to Kenan, to what we call Eretz Israel. But both Rashi and Radak point out that Tir Kenan means a merchant, and the Canaanites were called that because they were merchants. But Bavel also is sometimes called Eretz Kenan, at least in Yechezkel, Be'ir Rochlim Samo, in a city of peddlers, of merchants. He put him, Vayikach Mizer Ha'aretz, and then he takes from the seed of its own land. The Radak points out that when Nebuchadnezzar takes away one king, he could have put in a ruler from another nation. But instead, he took a homegrown king. So that's what Rezer Ha'aretz means. Vayineu Bizdei Zara, and he puts it in a land where it, in a field where it could grow. Kach Almayim Rabim Tzavtafashimo Samo, in a place where there's plenty of water growing. And Tzavtafashimo should mean that he made it into a plant, that should have been good because there's a lot of water. But Tzavtafa is considered a lower form of a plant, that the, even though it had all of the possibilities of doing well, it ends up not doing well. In fact, the Gemara in Sukkah has a whole discussion about Arava, that in Arava, Aravot have to grow by the water, and they mention there's a similar plant that grows in the mountains called the Taftafa, which is not, doesn't grow by the water, and is not valid to use for Aravot on Sukkot. And they quote our Pasuk here, meaning that it's supposed to be on Mayim Rabim, but it turns into a Taftafa, which is this inferior form of a plant. Pasuk Vav Vayitzmach, Mahila Geffen Sorachat Shiflat Koma Lifnot Vel Diotav Elav Nesharashav Tachtav Yiyu Matila Gev Matas Badim Matashleya Parot. So it, when it sprouts and grows, it becomes a spreading vine of low stature. It produces branches, sends out boughs, right? So it was supposed to be that its root, its twigs would turn to him, its roots would stay under him, but it doesn't happen that way. So at that point, we've already switched the metaphor, meaning we started off with an Erez, and now it turns into a Geffen. But he suggests that already in the time of Menashe, that the power of the kingdom, of Yehudah had already begun to descend once Menashe came on the scene and did his various terrible sins and various abominations. Vayi nesher echad gadol, pasuk zayin. Vayi nesher echad gadol gidol kenafayim v'rav nutza. There was another nesher, also large, also with great wingspan and lots of plumage. V'nei gefen azot kafnasher asher alav, and the gefen turns to this nesher, medaliotav shilchalo lashkorotam erigot mataan. It sends out twigs, meaning grows in that direction, looking for, hoping for that it would water it more when the bed was planted. And then the pasuk stops to point out in pasuk chet el sadet tovil mayim rabim hishtula, when this plant was planted in a place that had plenty of water. Right? Rashi says valchinam astazot. There was no good reason for this. There was no reason why this plant, in our metaphor, should be turning towards this other nesher, because it has plenty of resources of its own to grow and to be fine of its own. And the Radak reads some of this, some of these parts, as being about the rebellion of Nebuchadnezzar, against Nebuchadnezzar, that Tzidkiyahu's rebellion. Pasuk Vav, when it says that Nebuchadnezzar, the nesher, had expected this Geffen to turn towards him, so Radak points out that when Tzidkiyahu first ruled, he did very, very well. He was very successful the first 4 years of his kingdom. The Radak assumes that it's in year 5 that Tzidkiyahu rebels, because in year 4 he goes to Bavel to have a meeting with Nebuchadnezzar and to assure him of his fidelity, and then he comes back and he rebels. That would be interesting, because we saw that the early Nevuot of Yechezkel seemed to happen around the year 5. So it would be interesting if Yechezkel begins getting Nevuot in Bavel at the time when Tzidkiyahu is rebelling in the way that's going to lead to the downfall of Yerushalayim and the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. That also is a sort of suggested to some extent by a tradition of Chazal that maybe this was the beginning of Yechezkel Nevuot. So that's a Mechilta de Rabbi Shmuel in Beshalach, which says that that either Perek Bet is the beginning of the Sefer, or our Perek of Chut Chida is Tchilat Sefer, and it was written here just because Ein Mutamein Muchar B'Torah. That would be a very radical version of it, that sometimes the Torah just mixes things up. So if, however, you follow that tradition, this is early on in his career, and this is a reaction to Tzidkiyahu's rebellion, so then the rebellion seems to be connected to the beginning of the whole expression, Yechezkel's prophecies. So in Pasuk Chet, again, the point was that this Geffen is turning towards this other Nesher, identified Rashi and Radak as the Egyptians, who will turn out to be of no use to the Jewish people. They'll never actually help them, but they turned away, even though in their plant, in their field where they were planted, they were fine. They could have lasso tanav, lasso peri, la gefen adav. They could have grown into a mighty, tremendous, noble vine, meaning just by living under Nebuchadnezzar and suffering under his control, we would have been able to succeed and prosper. And the Radak points out that Yirmiyahu also says this often to Tzidkiyahu, even at the very late stages of the rebellion. He says to him, if you just go and surrender and admit you did the wrong thing and give up, then you'll save something. And Tzidkiyahu refuses to. And Tzidkiyahu refuses to. So Pasuk Ted and Mor Kolamar Hashem Lakim Titzlach Halo Et Shavashay Yinatek V'Priya Yikoseis V'Yavesh Kol Tapetim Chativash V'Lo V'Zroa Gidola Uva Amrav L'Masot Otah Misharashah. So then say, this is what Hashem says, this is going to work. So the first Nesher, right, the first eagle, the first ruler, is going to tear out its roots, cut off its roots, and going to take away all of its fruit, and it's going to dry up all of the pieces of its fruit, right, of its planting, until everything dries up, and there's nothing going to be saved. And, you know, you can have a mighty arm, you can have a lot of people, nothing's going to be able to put it back and to save it from it being transplanted. You can plant it again. Is it going to work? When the east wind comes against it, it will dry up. And it will wither right there where it's growing. So, So what does all this mean? It's not so clear in the metaphor. I mean, even with Rashi and Radak. So here, she thinks, Radak says on the Vihinei Shetulah, that Tzidkiyahu thinks they're well planted, and so well planted that they can rebel. But the answer is that no, the Nesher is going to make her realize that it's not true, and that they don't have any support to stand on, and this rebellion was ill planned and ill advised, and is going to lead to their downfall. Suppose Yidala Vahid Rashem Elaimore, and more now the Beit HaMeri, Halawi Date Ma'ele. So he says, say to the rebellious people, don't you know what I'm talking about? Don't you understand the analogy? Meaning Yechizkel just says it this way. He just comes out and I tell you a story. My story is a story of an Esher and a tree and a cedar and a vine and this, that, and this was to catch it. So we caught it because Rashi, Radak, and Chazal have helped us understand it. So he says to them, don't you know what I'm talking about? And more. Say to them, look, the king of Babel went to Yerushalayim and he took its king and its nobility. That's who these people are. Yechezkel is among these Golim, among these exiles. That's who they are. And he took somebody from the ruling party, meaning he didn't overthrow the entire government of the Jewish people and put somebody else in power. He stuck with their tradition, and he took another member of the royal family and he made a pact. And they swore together. And then he took the mighty nobles of the land away with him. So the point being that we were supposed to understand what was going on and live with our oath. And all we had to do, it could have just been a humble kingdom, a kingdom under the rule of Babel, not getting too high and proud of ourselves, to follow the pact that we've made so that it would stand. So instead, Pasuk Tevav, Vayimrod bo lishloch malachav in Mitzrayim, instead he turns to Egypt, Latei lo susim v'amrav, thinking that Egypt would send them horses and a supporting army, Hayitzlach, Hayimaleit ha'vose'ele, v'efer berit v'nimlat. Is it going to be true that you can violate a pact, violate a covenant that you made, and get away with it? So that's an interesting sort of perspective here, meaning that Hashem seems to be saying that it's not only the many other sins we've seen. The Jews were worshipping idols, they were committing murder, and all these various things that made them deserve galut. But here it's even more narrowly. Just the fact that Tzidkiyahu violated a pact that he made for no good reason. So if you make an agreement with somebody, you have to keep it. And the fact that it's inconvenient to keep it, you can get away without keeping it, would not be a reason. So here too. How could it be that he thinks he's going to violate his pact and get away and escape? Chai ani neum Hashem, Elokim lo bimkom hamelech, Hamamlich oto asher bazat alato v'asher efer brito ito b'toch bavel yamut. So he says, I have to tell you, it's coming from Hashem, that in the very homeland of the king who made him king, meaning Tzidkiyahu became king because Nebuchadnezzar made him into a king, he's going to be brought to the homeland of Nebuchadnezzar, meaning to Bavel, and that's where in Bavel he will die. V'lo b'chayal gadol v'kal rav yaseh oto paro b'malchama b'shpoch sod lav if no taik. When the Babylonians come and they start building the ramp to make and siege towers, right? A dayek is the towers to start lachwit nefashot rabot, start killing a lot of people, start destroying the lives by laying siege to Jerusalem. Mitzrayim's not going to come through at all. They're not going to come. Uvaza ala lafer brit, they're going to reject their pact and their covenant. Minei netan yadov chol eila asa lo yimalein. And Tzidkiyahu, who had given a promise and then did all these things, he's not going to be able to escape. He's not going to be able to escape from the consequences of his actions. And notice the midah keneged midah aspect here. Right? He breaks the covenant with Nebuchadnezzar to try to go make a pact with the Egyptians, and then it turns out the Egyptians are going to violate the pact. They're not going to help him. They're not going to do anything for him that they claim that they would do. L'chein klamar Hashem Elokim chayani. And it's not only about the violations of the pacts, of the political pacts, but Hashem now brings it back into the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. My pact that he broke, and my covenant, and I'm going to turn that on his head as well. Ufarasti alav rishti. Hashem says, I'm going to spread out my own net against him. And he passed bidin sudati. This is related by Rashi to the tradition of Chazal that Tzidkiyahu had this tunnel that he thought he was going to escape through the tunnel, and that Hashem sort of sent a deer, is what Chazal's tradition was, that a deer on top of the cave or the long tunnel, and that the Babylonian soldiers who thought they were looking for Ezekiel, then noticed the deer, and they started chasing the deer because it was a beautiful deer, and they started chasing after that, and when the deer reaches the end of the tunnel, Ezekiel was just exiting so that it lured them there, and that's Hashem's hand operating in Ezekiel not getting away. So all of this is to say that Hashem is trying to make the Jews in Ezekiel understand that they are thoughts of escaping, their thoughts of being able to resist Bavel are based on a faulty notion that they can get away with things that they want to do, and then Hashem won't step in. But Hashem is saying that's not what's going to happen. Vaviotiu Bavela Rishpati Ito Sham, and I will cause him to be judged there. Ma'alo Hashem Ma'albi, all of the sacrileges, all of the trespasses, all of the things that he did wrong towards me. So, and the Radak points out that's what was being said. He's going to be in prison there. He's going to be enslaved there. He's going to have his eyes put out. All of that stuff. It's not only a political occurrence, even though the politics of it is a problem, as we noticed in this parak, that just the fact that he violated the covenant. But the violating the covenant in politics is just another form of the violations of pacts that Gio had done for a long time in terms of not listening to what Hashem wants. So that comes back to our recurring theme in this and any Navi that's talking about the descent into exile, that the Jews' first step and the first misstep, the first thing that leads them to all the terrible happenings they're here, is their abandonment of their relationship with Hashem. Part of the tragedy of it, as we've noticed before, is they don't even see it that way. So Ezekiel doesn't, I'm sure, didn't at that time see his turning to Mitzrayim as an immoral deed. It's sort of politics. Yeah, you made an agreement with Nebuchadnezzar, but it was sort of a coerced agreement. Nebuchadnezzar did it by force, and I was only afraid of him because he took the previous group away to exile in Babel, but now that I'm stronger, I have the right to rebel. So none of this is true. Right? None of that is true in the most mundane sense of needing to keep your word in pacts that you make with a mundane king. Now Hashem is flipping it on his head and pointing out that all of that violations of pacts is really just another example of a general faithlessness of the Jewish people, and that it starts with you not being faithful to pacts that you've made, and that's what's going on here. Pasukav Aleph, the eight kol mivrachav bechol agapa b'cherv yipolu manisharim lachol ruach yipareshu vidatem ki ani Hashem dibarti. Right, all of the other people running away with him, meaning all of his battalions, all the armies that he thought would help him defeat Bavel, they're all gonna flee in every direction. And then, with all of this happening, you'll know that it's Hashem acting here. So ideally, that's what's supposed to happen. I'm not sure that it has happened, but that's what ideally what's supposed to happen is supposed to recognize, see, realize, understand, and from there come to accept that it's Hashem bringing all of these things about. So now Hashem turns back to the metaphor and says that there will, however, become a time when I will take some of that tzemeret. So remember that the tzemeret ha'erez, the top of the cedar, was what Nebuchadnezzar first took. That's the metaphor for the exiles with whom Yechezkel went into exile, that the nobility and the kings. And I'll take from that top and from that heads of the trees. I'm going to take some of that from the exile, and I'm going to put it back in its place, right? And I'm going to take a soft twig of them, and I'll plant it in a tall, towering mountain, meaning in a good place for it to grow. And then what's going to happen? Behar Merom Yisrael Eshtalenu, I'll plant it in the highest mountains of the Jewish people, Venasa Anaf, and it will grow branches, and it will make fruit. Mayal Erez Adir will become a towering, a powerful cedar. So again, in the metaphor, that was the time when the Jews had their highest forms of rule and were in their greatest power. And power here, not only were in the less important sense of political power, but in the sense of being an expression of Hashem and Hashem's will in the world. It will have such shade and such a spread of influence that all of the birds will shade themselves or will hide themselves, take shelter in its branches and its leaves. Now there's an interesting Gemara talking about this expression of the flowering redemption of Hashem replanting us. So the Gemara in Shabbos, Laman Amid Beis, has Rav Gamliel darshaning, and he says, "Atidim ilonot Shemotim Perot B'Choyom. There will come a time when trees will produce fruit every day. So that would solve much of the world's, any of the world's food crisis that you have. It's a whole different discussion how that'll happen. Who knows? But he quotes our pasuk, "Menasa anaf v'asa peri." He quotes the pasuk that says that Hashem will plant this tree and it will grow branches and then it will make fruit. So he assumes, Rabbi Gamliel, in the drasha, he says, "Ma anaf b'choyom," just like trees have branches every day and the tree branches grow every day, so too fruit every day. Someone who's listening mocks the idea and says, doesn't the pasuk say, "In kol chadash tachat hashemesh"? Nothing is inherently new under the sun. So that's an interesting read of that pasuk. And Rambam doesn't reject that reading of the pasuk. I mean, here's the, that reading of the pasuk is there's nothing meaningfully new. So you have to figure out what that means in terms of all the things that we know of is new. You'd have to say things like microwaves. Microwaves were always out there in some way. So then, theoretically, Rambam could have just answered, well, it's in potential. It's true it hasn't happened yet, but it's in potential. So that whole idea of what we consider new, what we don't consider new, what Kohelet means by Ein Kol Chadash Tachat HaShemesh, that's a different discussion. But it doesn't answer him that way. He just says, you know what? We have an example here. He names a plant called Etzlaf, and their understanding of how Etzlaf grew was that it fit these parameters of having fruit every day. So in that Gemara, it's really a discussion about how much you believe in Chazal and how much you understand and how, what an apikoros is and things like that. So it's not really so much our issue. It could be taken as an issue about the nature of the world of Mashiach, and that's a different discussion. How much will be natural in the world of Mashiach? But if Rav Gamliel is accepting that it's like a tzlaf, he seems to be suggesting not that it'll be supernatural, it will be natural, but that aspects of nature that are perhaps today little noticed will become more prominent. So if I read that, I would imagine, or I could imagine, that that might be predicting in some way, I mean, that consciously knew what they're talking about, but that the implication might be that there will be a time when we find a way, in which nature always has had the potential to have trees bear fruit every day, and that that will then be realized. So just like scientists all the time discover new potentials within nature, so something like that could happen. But that even that wasn't what I wanted to stress here. What I wanted to stress here was, if you're taking the pasuk to mean that it'll happen within a day, that's not explicit in the pasuk, right? Behind Rome Yisrael, Shtalin, I'll plant in Behind Rome Yisrael, and then it'll grow branches and fruit, and become an Erez Adir, and then all of the birds will shelter themselves under that new cedar. If Rabbi Gamliel is taking it as happening in a day, it would seem to suggest that this replanting and this arrival of Mashiach will happen fairly quickly in the world scale of time. So what a day is in the world scale of time, it's hard to know. Some, you might say it's 1,000 years, but it doesn't seem to be like that because we only have, because that would be a fairly long time within the world history, but, or within human civilized history. But it seems to suggest that the arrival of Mashiach and the growth of his influence will happen fairly quickly in Rabbi Gamliel's understanding of the pasuk. Also, I would point out the whole idea of sheltering birds. So sheltering birds is something like what Shibud Malchiyot means. Shibud Malchiyot is the tradition that the Rambam at least kept to in terms of there's a statement in Chazal that says the only difference between our time and the time of Mashiach is Shibud Malchiyot, which you could have read as that the, all the other nations will be enslaved to us. But here it doesn't seem like the birds are enslaved to the cedar. It's more that they recognize the power of the cedar and they turn to it for comfort and assistance and guidance. And I find that an interesting picture of what Yimon HaMashiach will be like. V'yad'u, Pasuk Chav Dalet, V'yad'u Kol Atzei HaSadeh, Ki Hashem, all the other trees, so that would also be other kingdoms, will know that I am Hashem and that I have Ishbalti Eitz Gavoa, and I lowered a tall tree, Higbati Eitz Shafel, and I raised up a low tree, Hovashti Eitz Lach, I can dry up a tree that's moist and has lots of water and truth, Vivrachti Eitz Yavesh, and I can make a dry tree flower, Neshem Dibayti Vasiti, the point being that the fortunes of all the nations of the world, the fortunes especially of Tzidkiyahu and of Yehuda, are in Hashem's hands, and that part of the error was thinking they were so powerful they could rebel against the Nebuchadnezzar and turn on that covenant, which then became an easy way for Hashem to point out that they hadn't, that they rejected Hashem's covenant as well. So the thrust of the parak, the end part of it is that it all lies in Hashem's hands, and that's the thrust of the parak, is that that abandoning covenants with Hashem is a bad idea, abandoning covenants in general is a bad idea, and that Tzidkiyahu's confidence in his ability to resist Nebuchadnezzar betrays many different errors that Tzidkiyahu and the Jewish people are making at that time, and it's those errors that will sadly lead to the exile in Bavel. But despite those errors, or because of the covenant that wasn't supposed to be broken, Hashem will then, perhaps extremely quickly, as Rav Gamliel has it in the Gemara, and the Gemara in Shabbos, will bring that back, and will the Jewish people and their king will once again be a tall, mighty, powerful cedar with great branches under which all the birds of the world, which maybe perhaps as individuals rather than nations, will be able to shelter themselves, and all the rest of the trees of the field will come to understand that the growth of a tree, and again the metaphor, the growth of a nation, and the ability of a nation doesn't have to do with its resources, whether it has water or doesn't have water, whether it has nurturing or doesn't have nurturing, it only has to do with Hashem, and the realization of that message is the one that will be the best way to get back into us being a nation that really expresses Hashem's power and role in the world. Have a great day.